This is Fish and Frank in the chair, and it's time for another Radio Fishing. And we've got a fishing report with Captain Carl, Captain Kale, and the other guy. Yeah, so, anyway, now that all three of us are here, the other guy, that guy, and this guy. So, I guess we can start on with the show.
Who's on first?
Let me get rid of Frank on the guitar.
He's on second.
Okay. Yeah, somebody need to shoot him anyway. Alrighty then, boys and girls. Both you guys been on the water pretty much every day. Who's on first?
I mean, I've been tarpon fishing every single day. The tarpon are going phenomenal right now. I mean, I'm out on the beach fishing all my tarpon.
That's Captain Carl. Yes, and the crowd. The crowd's very pleased with that. Very pleased. Very pleased with Captain Carl. Okay, and so tarpon are doing real good.
Yep, I mean, I usually start my morning out 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, just because sometimes that bite's going to be very early. Sometimes it's going to be later, but I'd much rather be out there waiting for the bite to start instead of missing the bite.
Yeah, it's always better to go, okay, well, it's going to take a little longer than, hey, guys, it was really great an hour ago.
Too bad we weren't on the water then.
Yeah. Boy, if we were only here an hour ago, we could have really caught some fish.
That's my story. Should have been here an hour ago, or we should have waited 10 more minutes before we left.
Oh, yeah, that's one thing that always makes you nuts, is chasing tarpon.
That's why I've been avoiding it.
And good.
And I'm a lot less stressed out.
And
fish here.
I was talking to one of the other guys. I don't think Fish is doing too many of them. I know Fish has done some tarpon charters.
Not very many. He's been whacking snook.
He's been trying to stay on the backcountry.
Yeah.
I mean, every once in a while you get that lucky year and you don't have to chase those aggravating son of a guns.
Yeah, and it's to first become a good tarpon charter captain, you have to get a reputation as being a good tarpon captain. And I don't have that this year, and I'm happy with it. I am just overjoyed I don't have to fish for those things.
I like catching them every once in a while. I was lucky in my life. I've managed to catch a lot of different tarpon. We used to race to bring them back, and I've done a lot of different stuff, everything from inside, outside bait, you know, you name it. I've done pretty much every tarpon fishing method you could do. And, today, I like flattening the barb out. I like letting them jump up in the air once or twice and go, wow, look at that. And then, come on, let go of the hook. Let go. Off the leash. Run away. Run away.
This year, I don't fish for tarpon unless it's a sure bet.
Okay, describe that.
If I'm not 100% sure that I can go catch a tarpon, we're not doing it.
I can.
I've been doing pretty good with that philosophy. Every time we've gone out, we've caught tarpon.
Okay.
Now, it's only been 3 or 4 trips, and I'm happy with that.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, I've had a couple things. I'm trying to decide if I want to walk away a winner or if I'm going to try and do it again.
Yeah. If I can't look like Superman that day, I'm not doing tarpon.
Yep. I get it. So, now, Carl, you're on the opposite end. I mean, you're chasing them every day.
Yep. I mean, they're cooperating very good for me this year. I'm not having a problem with them at all. I think one of the main things that's helping me out is I'm using like 10 or 12 foot leaders. I'm tying that really small FG knot that everybody's been talking about lately. I mean, it really helps me have really long leaders for this.
You know,
have you tried my hooks yet?
No.
The other thing I can actually tell you. Okay, now we got to get into this. Go ahead. What is that?
I've switched hooks on tarpon. I've thrown away the circle hooks. I'm done with circle hooks on tarpon.
Yeah, they suck.
I only use J hooks.
I've gone to very, very tiny 3-aught and 4-aught J hooks.
Okay.
The live bait hooks, those 4 extra strong, big, thick wire hooks.
Yeah.
But little 3 and 4-aught hooks. And I don't use tarpon anymore.
Wow.
And I've been using them for cobia. They work very, very well for cobia.
Talking about that little short shank, really heavy VMC.
Yep. And phenomenal. Well, Robert Moore said, try these. And I listened, unlike Carl. And they work great. They're phenomenal on tarpon. Jump all you want. You're not coming off.
No, we don't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not having too much of a problem with tarpon getting off. I mean, I'm using a 6 or 7-aught owner hook, J hook. I'm not a big fan of circle hooks. I'm using 60-pound leader line with 50 or 60-pound braid. Most of our stuff is all free line that we're getting.
Okay, the only thing I will tell people out there is the reason I don't like circle hooks, you can't get them out of the fish. Too difficult to remove from a fish. I think it's unfair to the fish. And for some reason, on a tarpon, you get very few that swallow the hook. It's just pretty much non-existent. And, you know, I sitting there trying to pry that hook out of the darn fish. It won't come out. You got to bend open the hook. You got to cut the hook. It's just a nightmare with a circle hook that I just, you know, I went back to the J hooks. Now, me, because I don't want them to come to all the way to the boat, I don't want to fight them for 45 minutes. I pinch the barbs down and, you know. So, yeah, I'm not doing anything. Now, Carl, I'm going to tell you, if you're up to using a 15-foot leader, why don't you switch to mono?
Casting reasons.
But if you got 15 feet of leader, you're trying to throw that leader out, you're not getting any more than you would out of the mono.
I mean, I'm sitting 20, 30 yards off of, maybe sometimes 40 yards off the fish. I'm using all 7, 6, 8-foot rods, so I'm able to cast a little bit farther.
Yeah, but you could do that with 25 mono. Then you need to get even more hookups. You need to switch one of your rods over to mono and try it. Because if you've got 15 feet of leader on,
if you won't try my hooks, do you think he's going to try your line?
But if you got four or five, you got six feet sitting out of there, and then you got the rods full line, and you could still got it on the reel. Do you still have leader on the reel when you're trying to cast?
Do you want my shoe?
Very little bit.
Huh? Do you want my shoe?
No, I can't.
We'll take your suggestions better than Carl.
Yes. But if you still got some wrapped on the reel, you're essentially throwing 40 pounds like that. I mean, it comes off a little bit, but, you know, if for what you're talking about, I would, it sounds to me like you need to switch back and get one rod going with mono. Put 20 or 25 mono on it and give it a shot.
Probably try that.
Well, you're going to.
Never thought of it like that, but.
Yeah. You'll get more hookups. Monofilament is way more invisible. Braid is 100% visible. They see it. And people say, well, I got to tie a line to line knot. Well, you're using braid, aren't you? We'll put a swivel in there. What difference could it possibly make? It doesn't make any difference at all. But if you're using mono to fluorocarbon, mono to mono, the swivel makes a big difference. It's something there that's visible. You know, that's what I don't get is people never thought that when they change the line and the entire properties of the line, maybe they could change the way they rig too. But no, we did it with mono and then we're doing it with braid. The only time I don't like to do it is if I'm throwing a lure. That if it's not a crankbait where I'm reeling in steady, like a spoon or, you know, a lure with a lip on it, if I got to twitch it or do whatever, then I don't want the swivel there because it will sink a little bit too fast and it'll upset the action of my lure.
See, like when I find these pods of fish, I don't jump in, start fishing them right away. I'll sit back, see which way they're moving, see how fast they're going. If they're moving fast, I'll leave them alone and I'll go find another pod. If they're moving very slow, I will figure out which way they're going and get in front of them. And then I'm leading them 10 to 15 feet in front of the pod, whichever way the leader's going with the baits.
And that's something that a lot of tarpon fishermen miss.
Mm-hmm.
Watch the fish.
Yep.
Give it a minute. Watch the fish. They'll tell you everything you need to know.
Mm-hmm. They'll tell you if they're happy. They'll tell you if they're spooked. I mean,
it's
all about having your bait in the right position to where they're all going to swim.
And it's lost. Now it's just, there's a tarpon, throw at it!
Pretty much.
That's what it's come down to anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody actually watches the fish.
I mean, as long as you have your bait in front of the leader and the leader swims through it, the rest of those fish are going to swim through your bait too. Wherever that leader goes, the rest of them are going to follow. So that's what I've been getting in front, casting at them. And when the bait hits the water, I'm actually feeding line to them. I don't want tension on that line because then that crab's being pulled up and it's not going to be looking natural. So when my bait hits the water, I'm actually opening my bail and feeding a little bit of line to them, a little bit of line to them. And then I'll flip my bail back over. I'm just trying to make it as natural as can be.
All right. Now, how are you placing the hook in that bait?
I'm hooking them from the bottom, going straight up through the corner of the shell of the crab.
So, out by the point, or are you going through the leg?
Out the point.
Like normal.
Yeah.
Oh, just a crab in distress. Never mind. I couldn't help myself. because the two ways of doing it, going through where the legs are, because mm-hmm. that's the soft part of the shell, and out through that little white spot on that little corner. Now, I find I have to drill
that's
through.
That's it, yep. Because if you try to force it through, you're going to crack the shell.
You know, I've often thought if I just took a cordless drill with me, with a little drill bit, and just did a starter hole.
Or jump the pilot hole.
I thought
of
that already.
Go through. Because, you know, you get those little drills that would be yep. just ideal for that. You
yeah.
know?
Oh, yeah.
Little,
yeah.
They, you know, inline like a little screwdriver thing.
Perfect.
Put a little sharp drill bit in there, and... The whole thing about the crab screaming with pain is ridiculous, because if your whole entire outer body falls off every month or two, you don't have time to rego nerve endings. You're relying on that nope. hard shell to protect you.
Did you put any through the flippers?
No,
I have never done that. How? Just explain that.
The two little swimming legs?
Mm-hmm.
Some people have been hooking them through those.
Now, they do know those legs can be detached from
right.
the crab.
Right.
With ease, the crab just lets them go.
Right, it's not a good casting option.
No, I just can't imagine that would be a very good bet at all.
I hook them like that if I'm using them at the 41 bridge at night.
Really?
Yeah.
Drop them out,
because you're just dropping them and
feeding them out.
Yeah, paying them out line in the current.
I don't think a lot of people realize that a crab can let go of its claws, its legs, its flippers, anything that's sticking out of the shell can literally, they can go, okay, getting rid of that, and boom, it just yep. falls off.
It's like a defense, like a lizard's tail.
Yeah, and but they can do it at will. With a lizard, he, you know, the tail has to be pulled off, I think, but and they can release it, but that, no, with a
yeah,
crab.
Yeah, they just drop it, it'll grow back.
And then they just grow
don't worry
leg.
About it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Man, that's the whole point of stone crab claws. It pinch the
exactly.
claws off, throw the crab back. It grows them back the next time it molts.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's why I was, when you said hooking them through the flipper, I thought, man, that would be tough to keep on. They could just let that leg go, and at $3 yep. bucks a crab, you know, I'm cheap, you know, really
right.
cheap.
But at the same time, they don't usually let go of that leg.
Really?
No, that's their getaway leg.
That's true too, yeah.
You know, that's like being chased by a bunch of zombies and then shooting yourself in the foot. You're not getting away very fast. You shoot your buddy in the foot.
I don't have to be faster than a
right.
zombie. I got to be faster
right.
than you.
So they usually don't like to drop those swimming legs off.
Yeah, that's true. No, I didn't think of it that way, but that's a really good point. See, this is why we do this show. This information pouring out of this is just, it's just tremendous. I mean, you know, we should go to Washington.
Put on your waders before you get wet.
It's easier to wash this smell off
yeah.
anyway. All right, so anyway, back to the tarpon. Where has been the vast majority? Last tarpon map I put up, I've got to put up another one. Most everything was on the beaches.
Yeah, I'm on the beach every single day. I'm either between Little Gasparilla and Stump Pass, or between Little Gasparilla and Boca Grande Pass.
So we could narrow it down to Boca Grande Pass and Stump Pass.
Yep. I mean, sometimes I'll get out there in the mornings and I'll just start idling down towards Boca Grande Pass.
Now, you've gone all the way to Venice.
Yes.
You ran all the way to Venice a couple of times yep. looking for tarpon.
Yep. And then came back through the same way I went, can't find them. So then I'll anchor up and just wait for them, and then they come running from the way I just went.
And you're still putting it at the beach?
No, I'm putting it at Placida.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, you're talking on some tarpon trips, traveling 100 miles almost,
easily.
80-some miles to find fish that are willing to eat.
All those fish that are on the beach right now, they are moving from the north, moving south.
Well, a lot of that now, Dwayne has a theory, and it sounds feasible, and a lot of guys argue with this, but these are theories, they're not facts, that every time we have a thunderstorm, and almost every night somewhere over the harbor, you get a little bit of lightning and
they
thunder,
go deep.
And they shoot out to the Gulf, they're looking to go deep, and I guess if I was 50 years old and, you know,
well,
200 pounds, and, you know,
but their eyes are so big, too.
Yeah, and lightning would...
Look at it this way. If you're sitting in 3 feet of water, 4 feet of water, 5 feet of water off of the beach, even 10 or 12 feet of water in the pan or the hill, and a storm rolls through, that water gets shaken up. It's rough.
Yeah, it's also
if you go offshore,
a very good place to die.
If you go offshore and go deep, you're not dealing with that current. You're not dealing with the mix-up. It's no different than us driving our boats around a storm.
I don't know. I think it has more with, you know, I think they're smart enough when the lightning hits, you get that charge in the water, and you're going to get out to where you have more of a disbursement for the electrical charge.
Sure.
Because the shallower the water, the more intense the electricity would be there.
And yeah. Salt water isn't a very good conductor.
No, but it's still water.
It's still a conductor, but not very good.
Yeah, but
you're much safer down 80 feet than you are in 3 feet.
That's my point.
Yeah.
In 3 feet of water, you're going to die.
Yeah.
In 80 feet of water, chances are you're not going to get affected by it.
I mean,
what if all these dead tarpon they find floating are from electrical strikes?
Could be.
Why wouldn't that screw up some people's agendas?
I can tell you, the worst offenders right now in my book are the guys fishing with bait using 100-pound test leaders and then breaking the leader in the fish's mouth. Mm. That is the people right now causing the most tarpon deaths. That's the ones...
Breaking it intentionally?
Yeah, they seem to think that when they get it up, it's better to snap it off in the tarpon's jaw rather than bringing the fish up and releasing it. I think some of them use bigger boats and they can't reach the tarpon as well or something. I don't really know.
Too high of a reach for them.
But it's...
But they're too lazy to reach over the gunwale and resuscitate the tarpon?
No, they
just
don't.
Break it off when it's tired?
They just reel it in, get it close to the boat, and when they grab the leader, they snap the leader off. And I've asked several of them that have let me tie 100-pound test to any one of their body parts, and preferably one of my choice, and let me see if I can't break it off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'd be satisfied, let me tie it around your arm. And let me see if I can't break that 100-pound test without dislocating your shoulder, much less the jaw.
Yeah, what
of
are
the
they
fish.
Doing these jaws of the fish?
Yeah, it's got to be pretty detrimental. So to me, they're the worst offenders right now. The only time you'd ever want to break off a tarpon is if he's being chased by a shark, when that's a matter of imminent danger.
Yeah. I had my first encounter yesterday with one.
You got a video of some pretty amazing, you see this big shape coming up.
It was a big hammerhead. He was... I mean, my guess, he was 13, 14 plus. We landed a 200-pound tarpon yesterday. We got him revived. We kicked the boat in gear. He started getting all frisky, getting his energy back, so I held on to him for a couple more minutes. He started throwing me around like a little rag doll, so I decided to let him go. Well, he got 5 feet off the boat, and straight up from the bottom, here come a big hammerhead. It's first one I've seen all year.
How big was he?
Oh, he made me back up.
So what are you guessing?
My guess, he was 14, 15 foot.
He was 14 good. Feet of swimming death.
It was a big one.
What is it about a hammerhead? You know, the bull sharks come around the boat, and it's interesting, but it's not the same thing. A hammerhead comes around the boat, and the hair on the back of your neck stands up, and you find yourself... You were leaning on the gunwale, but now you're standing
in the middle
of the boat.
See, and that's the weird thing. I'm just the opposite. The hammers don't bother me. It's the bull sharks.
Really?
Well, yeah. The bull shark's the one that's going to latch onto the side of your boat or do something stupid. Not the hammer. He just wants to eat that tarpon, that's all.
Oh, no, I get it. The hammerhead is not going to bother you. I mean, it would be... It's hard to imagine a scenario where
I would rather be in water with thousands of hammerheads than one bull shark.
Because a bull shark is crazy. Mm-hmm. You have no idea what it's going to do. It could follow you. It could sniff you. It could bump you. It could bite you. It could do anything. It's impossible because bull sharks, they were born nuts. They need to be on... what is it?
Ritalin.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a pretty
bull sharks,
good way.
You know, and with all the kids on it, they're being fed Ritalin now, so it may calm them down.
I mean, no telling how long that shark was following that tarpon yesterday for.
Probably for quite a while.
I mean, my guess it was, because, I mean, I kept hearing my depth finder going off. It just kept pinging on me, pinging
on me.
Well, the
depth finder won't see the shark. They can't see the shark. But it will follow that tarpon... Probably for quite a while.
Now, do you have a side scan, an imaging one? No.
I just have a regular.
What yours is looking for is air bubbles in the water. It needs to find a swim bladder in order to tell you there's a fish there. And sharks don't have swim bladders, so unless he had swallowed a basketball whole.
He was big enough to do that.
Yeah. Now what you will find is usually if you get one that big, that's usually your matriarch female, and the other tarpon will follow it around and try and stay with it.
The hammerhead?
No, the tarpon.
Oh, okay.
He was probably pinging other tarpon following his around.
Gotcha.
But I'm sure that bull shark or that hammerhead was probably out there since the hook set, paying attention and watching.
We were right up on the beach when we hooked it, and we fought it for 20, 30 minutes there, and then he headed straight to deep water. We were about a mile and a half offshore when he got him.
When he headed the deep water, that's when it showed up.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you how long he was there.
Did he make a beeline to deep water?
The fish?
The tarpon, yes. Yeah. That's when it showed up.
So, anyway, we've been discussing tarpon and basically how you do that and all that. And the shark equivalent, although this year I've heard less sharks than we've heard of in
years. Way less. Like I said, I haven't even broke triple digits yet on sharks caught. And I should be well on my way to 200 by now.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a slight year in sharks. We don't know what's going on with that.
Darn snooker eating all the bait.
Darn snooker eating all the little tarpon.
Yep.
All the little sharks.
All the little sharks.
The snooker, yep.
Yeah.
They got to be. There's so many of them.
I don't think so, but it could happen.
It's gotten to the point where it's getting hard to catch catfish through all the snook.
That's not a bad thing, though. It means snook are coming back.
I don't think they ever went anywhere, but...
Not here, at least, but...
Yeah. But anyway, getting back onto it, have you been on the flats at all, Carl?
Actually, I had a redfish tournament this past weekend. First time I fished inshore in 2 months.
A while.
Yeah. I took a wild guess just to run down to one of my spots down in Matlachet, almost to Sanibel. And we fished on probably 150, 200 fish redfish school. We only managed to get two keepers out of that school. All the rest of them were 30 to almost 50 inches.
Wow.
We were using all big blue claw crabs, just throwing them out there on a Rockport Rattler or a regular J-hook. You could see them tailing, so, we just walked up to them. We tried throwing at the smaller tails that we seen, but the bigger ones came and got it.
And that's unusual, because usually the smaller fish are much quicker.
Yep. Give me that.
Yeah. I want that. I want to go get it, you know?
It was to the point where we set hook on one, and then it just start dumping line. It was like, well, this ain't no good, but it's a good fish.
It's fun, but it ain't going to win us no money.
There has been redfish and a lot of snook on the east side, up by Alligator Creek.
All right. Well, Kale, now we're getting
into it. That's the one main reason I won't fish redfish tournaments.
Okay.
I don't want to catch a 30-pound redfish and go, darn it!
Too big!
That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, if I could get a permit to allow people to bring in any size fish for one day, of a species, and I would hold a tournament again. But having a tournament where you've got 18 to 27 inches, and if you're a 32nd of an inch or a 16th of an inch or whatever it is, over, you're just over.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys all get upset. And for years, we did them that were an inch under the legal slot, so you didn't break the law.
Right.
And according to the law, when you bring a redfish in, if it's too big for the tournament, you should be getting a ticket right there.
You should be.
Yeah, you should.
And these guys, because I had to routinely, say, sorry, guys, your redfish is too big. And it breaks your heart. Literally, I would have nightmares over that stuff. And I just said, I'm never doing them again. Ever. I will not be a judge. I'm not doing another tournament where there's a slot limit on the fish. Ever. And so if they ever come up and say, okay, yeah, you can do one, and for this day you could catch release the biggest, fish of that species you could bring in, and the reason they went back to the exact legal size limit was because it didn't sound good because the people were only bringing in 6-pound fish. They weren't bringing in, you can get 2 more pounds when they get another inch bigger. So yeah, that's the whole thing about it. That's why bass tournaments are so much cooler. You're looking for the biggest bass you can find.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Wish we had more around here.
Well, they got a lot of bass things, and one thing I'll say about the bass tournaments is they pay out better. The saltwater tournaments have a much lower percentage payout.
Not only do they pay out better, they give more back. They give more back to the local waterways. They give more back to the local ecosystem.
You got
to
give the bass fishermen credit. They understand that in order to keep what they like doing going, you've got, it's a give and take. Okay, you want to, you know, get this, all this great fishing, you've got to support it with money, time.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to take care of the water system. You have to take care of the ecosystem. They get that.
And with the saltwater tournament, it's about making someone money.
Right.
But very seldom does it go, little or none of it ever goes back into the environment.
No, and hardly any of it goes back to the people fishing it.
Well, that's the other thing.
Very true.
What's the point?
Very true.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just one of those things. I guess we couldn't rant about tournaments, but, you know, what the heck. They are what they are, and people enjoy fishing them. And, you know, I'm not one of those that think we should ban all the tournaments. Now, Cale, you have a different opinion. You don't like the redfish tournaments at all. I don't think they're doing any more harm than just the guys going out fishing for the afternoon. You know, because these guys, same guys are going to go fishing anyway.
Yeah.
It's not like they're not going to go fishing.
True. That's not the problem I have with them, though.
Okay.
You know, my problem is you're supposed to be a catch-and-release tournament, and when you see a marina full of dead redfish after a tournament, that's not being reported to FWC like it's supposed to be. They're not being released like they're supposed to be. Then there's a problem.
Yeah, but you're talking about how they're run, not...
Yes, absolutely.
To me, that's...
Do I think that... They're helping put extra pressure on our fish? Absolutely.
I don't really know about that. I mean, everybody, I'm not one that really thinks that they're doing anything extra to reduce the numbers or extra pressure, because I know all these guys, and every one of them is going to go out and go fishing anyway. If they have a tournament that day, okay.
True.
Now, in Carl's case, he was doing tarpon and all that and did switch back and put extra pressure in redfish because of the tournament. So there is an argument to be made there that some of these guys that day...
It's all your fault, Carl.
...may not have gone to fish for redfish without the tournament, but... I don't know if it would really, over the course of the year, matter. And there's so little money to be made in tournaments nowadays that very few people are every year, because they were the car wash of the 2000s.
Every year.
Yeah, and now they're it's just not.
Yep.
It's not the cash cow it was anymore.
Not at all.
So anyway, but get back onto the flats. What's some good advice for people fishing the flats, there, Captain Cale?
First and foremost, you know, if you're going to fish the flats, make sure you've got white bait and shrimp, both. The trout out on the flats are just chewing up the shrimp. We sat just inside Pirate Harbor, and it was an educational trip, husband and wife, and I said, rig them up different. So see which one works better. And she put on shrimp, and he put on white bait, and I think she caught a dozen trout, and he finished the day with that one white bait. So they're definitely liking the shrimp out there better than they are the white bait.
Now, the mangrove snapper is the opposite point.
Mangrove snappers absolutely. They want that white bait now.
They're looking for the white
bait. They're tearing it up.
It's
snook, they want the white bait. Redfish. Redfish are going either way. If the white bait isn't working, try the shrimp. If the shrimp isn't working for the redfish, I've been taking the white bait, hooking them through the tail, ripping their head off, and throwing them out there.
So
just like a
bait.
Piece of cut bait. Yep, dead bait. They've been loving that.
Any ideas, Carl?
I mean, we brought 6 dozen crabs with us this weekend. I mean, we cut them in half, and we use, you know, each piece of crab, each one crab, we get 2 pieces of bait. I mean, we were out of bit crabs by 12 o'clock.
Gotcha.
That's my favorite redfish bait when it comes to fishing for redfish is blue paw crabs.
They work exceptionally well on redfish.
Yeah, but
how much did you pay for your crabs?
Nothing,
because you went and got them yourself.
Yeah.
How much do you charge for crabs, Frank?
They're expensive.
It's $30-some dollars a dozen.
$30-something dollars a dozen. Now, are you going to throw those at redfish, or are you going to throw those at 200-pound tarpon?
I get it. Yeah. The reason most people, they can't understand why those crabs are so expensive, but these crabs cannot be caught in traps.
Correct.
So some guy's going to go out, and they've got to walk around in these little creeks and ditches and shorelines, walking in the water with a flashlight and a headlamp and a bag or a mesh thing to put the crabs in and pick them up by hand.
By hand.
And
at the same time, hoping not to get eaten by sharks, alligators, or Sasquatch.
Yes. Water moccasins.
Water moccasins. That's
snakes,
a big one.
Spiders. Sawfish.
Yeah.
I mean, all these things, and the sawfish are not aggressive at all, I mean, but if you scare one, and he swipes you.
On one.
Yeah.
And stingrays.
Stingrays. I mean, that's a whole big can of nope for me.
And I can tell you, I can do it when I have to, and
no.
I pushed a lot of boats out from places I was stuck and walked them out and didn't really think anything of it, and but I can tell you...
There's a whole big difference in doing that in the daytime and the nighttime.
Oh, no, I mean, I've pushed boats out at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. I work mostly days, so I used to fish at night.
I go out of my way to make sure I don't have to get in this water, period, let alone at night.
Yeah, but...
Because I know what's out there.
I don't know. It doesn't bother me. I don't.
And I'm not the top of the food chain when I'm in that water at night.
The only thing I will tell you is that, to me, you haven't even touched on the worst aspect of all.
What's that? The bugs. Oh, my God, the mosquitoes.
No see-ums on the mosquitoes. This is the worst aspect. And if you're wondering why these crabs are so expensive, walk out and stand next to the water by any saltwater canal where there's mangroves.
And not just stand by the water. Make sure you get a bucket full of it and dump it over you first. Because you will see a difference in the amount of mosquitoes that come to you if you have saltwater on your skin or if you don't.
And just shake the mangroves around for a while.
Yeah, oh yeah. Bump one.
Yeah, bump the mangroves a little bit.
Just a little touch. That's all it takes.
I dare you.
I've got that little hole that I fish on the west wall when I take people in there. I tell them, do not touch the mangroves. Don't cast in them. Don't touch them with your hands. Why? I said, because there will be so many bugs here we'll have to leave.
You just woke everybody up.
Yeah, and it happens every time. We'll be good for about a half an hour catching lots of fish, and somebody will put one in the trees. And not only will they jerk it out, it'll fly back into the trees behind the boat, and now you've woken them all up.
Yep, the whole creek's gone.
Whoa, and then you start hearing this. And the slapping. Captain, can we leave? Yep. We sure can.
No idea.
Yeah, I always like that. You can, some times at night in the harbor, we'd be fishing, doing whatever we were fishing for, and all of a sudden you hear that buzz, that hum.
Yeah.
I mean, it's audible. You can literally hear them firing up, drying off their wings, and
yep,
the
first
wave that hits is the mosquitoes, and you think that's bad. You think the mosquitoes, this is horrendous. That was your warning shot.
Yeah, that was the shot over the bow.
That was the warning shot, and then what you don't hear is the no-see-ums coming in.
Yep, the first time I ever went fishing with Andrew Herzog, we were out in the middle of the harbor. We were out in the middle shark fishing, and the mosquitoes were so bad, we started putting on sunscreen. Like 10 times thicker than you normally would, just to give them some type of barrier.
Right.
And that didn't work. And we got to get out of here. This is insane. We actually had to leave.
Yep.
And the only thing worse than all that, and they're back, all those green horse flies.
Oh. Yeah, they do hurt.
And they don't leave you alone.
Oh, man.
They stay until you kill them.
Yeah. You've either got to kill them or give them their donation. Yep. One or the other. That's the only way they're going away.
Yeah, either let them bite and suck up enough blood till they're happy and they want to go back to lay eggs, or they will just, they're going to come back again and again and again.
Yep.
They never give up. So, anyway, so on these happy notes, aren't you glad?
Get out there and go fishing.
Yeah, come on down to Port Charlotte and go to the no-see-ums and the mosquitoes and the horse flies. And the
we got some of the best fishing in the world here.
But don't touch the mangroves. It's like, what do they say? Don't open that door.
Yeah, I thought our mosquitoes were bad here, and I watched a video of just how bad they are in Alaska.
Oh, I've heard stories. Oh.
Yeah, Canada, Alaska. I grew up in northern Wisconsin, and I can honestly tell you, we don't hold a candle to it.
No.
And they have no see-ums there, too, but they call them chiggers.
Yeah.
And they have all the stuff plus. But there's are the size of small World War II aircraft.
Yes, they are. And that's the ones we had up in Pennsylvania, too. We just didn't have that many of them.
Yeah, but they're big. I mean, Carl, you watch them coming in. And
you've seen the Mosquito Dragons, right?
Yeah.
That's how big our mosquitoes are up north. They're the size of the Mosquito Dragons down here.
Man. Now, does that Mosquito Dragon bite? No.
No, not at all.
He's just a
cool, mosquitoes.
Cool-looking
bug.
Or they do eat mosquitoes.
Yeah, they do eat mosquitoes.
And I will be catching and letting one go outside every time I see one in the porch.
Yeah, I've been killing them, man.
I don't kill those.
I'm not killing them ever again.
No, no. If they eat mosquitoes, they're my buddy. I'm going to very gently hold them and release them outside.
Yep. Be nice to them.
Because you don't ever kill snakes that are around your house ever, ever, ever. Because
then the rats come.
They wouldn't be there if there's snakes there, you get rats and mice.
Yeah.
It's the only reason they're there.
Right.
And let them take care of your problem. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with the lizards. Lizards eat bugs. Leave the lizards alone.
Yep.
Frogs eat bugs. Leave them alone. You know? And now, what we're talking about, the dragon mosquito, it's big. It's probably the size of a quarter, a nickel to a quarter stance-wise.
Yeah. They're big.
And they're big. You know, if where their legs would come out, they would easily touch the edge of a nickel.
They look like a big overgrown mosquito.
Yeah.
They don't bite.
Yeah, I didn't think they bit, but I had no idea they ate mosquitoes.
I never gave one the chance to, but now I'm going to save them all.
Yeah, if you eat mosquitoes, you're my friend, you're my buddy, you're my pal. Okay, so anyway, back into the fishing. Let's see. I don't know, what are we going to talk about fishing-wise?
Cobia.
Okay, cobia.
Lots of cobia out there. Upper Harbor, 41 Bridge.
There's some on the beaches.
Lashley, Fishing Pier, the west side of the Upper Hole. Steve, who's working out front, said he came by Marker 2 the other evening, and they were swimming in circles around the marker. If you're ever out around Sunset, you always have to go by Marker 2 and make sure there's no cobia swimming around it.
Marker 1 and 2.
So they're starting to really pick up in numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I've been catching them off the beaches mixed in with the pods of tarpon. There's been random cobia swimming out there, too. We've seen some Spanish mackerel out on the beach the past couple days.
One of my clients called me up and was fishing the Upper Hole. He said, I caught a 4-foot black tip. I said, but the weirdest thing, it didn't have any teeth. What do you mean it didn't have any teeth? Well, it took a little out of its mouth. It didn't have any teeth. You just threw back a 4-foot cobia. I did? Well, I really got to learn my fish better.
Mm-hmm.
And then he calls me the next morning. Yeah, you're right. It was a cobia. What'd you do? Look at the picture? He says, yeah, and I just caught another one. So he's been catching them pretty consistently out there in the mornings on the Upper Hole.
They're starting to show up, which is a good thing.
Okay, so now we've talked about what's your best bet for fishing for them. How are you going to go out and try and get that done?
They're really liking the small silver trout and the sugar trout. Big thread fins, if you can sabiki some up or cast net them up. Just get out there and drift. You're either going to catch a black tip with teeth or a black tip with no teeth. So you really can't complain.
Black tip with teeth or black tip without teeth. Okay. I'm slowly catching on to this. I don't know why. I just can't. You know, some days you just can't keep up properly.
The cobia that we've been catching out on the beach, I mean, they've been eating crabs for us. We haven't been targeting them.
Now, in the areas, they're called Ling the Crab Eater. L-A-N-G the Crab Eater.
Yep.
I mean, they're also eating some thread fins. I mean, they're eating our crabs. I mean, we're throwing at tarpon and every now and then, my clients are hooking into, you know, nice cobia mixed in with the tarpon.
Now, how far off the actual shore are you when you see these kind of hookups?
Sometimes I'm 10 yards off the beach. Sometimes I'm 100 yards off the beach.
So they're actually coming, these cobia are coming within casting distance of land. If you're standing on the beach there throwing out, they're actually within casting distance.
Yeah, this is the last time I followed Carl out for the tarpon. If you were standing on the beach, you could have jumped on the tarpon's backs.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
That's how tight to the beach
they're mixed in right with the tarpon, which is a little odd, but I mean,
no, not really. That's the cobia's game.
Oh, I know they follow stuff. I just didn't think they follow tarpon like that.
We had about a 120 pounder come up in the harbor the other day, up behind a manatee. Biggest cobia I've ever seen inshore.
Wow.
That's a big one.
And I thought we had him, too, because after that thing went down, that guy's rod took off. And it went, and I was waiting. I said, watch for the jump. And it didn't jump. And it didn't bite through the mono. So I thought, oh, yeah, we got him. Nope. 6 foot bull shark.
6 foot bull shark?
Yep. One of those tiny little J hooks that caught him right in the corner, right by the skin of his teeth. He couldn't bite through anything.
Mm. Yeah. Well, anything else we need to go over today, guys?
I mean, you get the only way you're gonna catch fish is if you're out there trying. If something's not going right for you, if that bait of the day is not working, switch to another bait. Because, I mean, every fish is different. They're just like people. Some day you want steaks. The next day you want chicken. The fish are the same way. Some days they want greenback. Some days they want shrimp. Some days they want crabs. So, I mean, always make sure you have multiple baits with you. I mean, that's the best thing I could probably say.
Kale?
It's really no different inshore. You know, a good mixture of bait is going to help. Like we said, the trout wanted one thing, the snook wanted another. Same thing. Make sure you take some shrimp with you.
Okay.
And look for your shaded areas if you're doing inshore fishing. A lot of your redfish and snook are going to go to that shade. It's a little bit cooler.
Well, that's Captain Carl there in the chair, and the crowd loves you, buddy. Yes, Captain Carl, and we got Captain Kale. Oh, goodness, what a day, what a show. What a show on Radio Fishing. I got to tell you, this has been just a good show here today. And anyway, this is Fishing Frank here in the chair, and I guess we're going to wrap up this Radio Fishing, and thank you much for coming on, guys. Say goodbye, Carl.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Kale.
Bye.
All right, Fishing Franks, and thanks for listening, guys. Catch you on the next Radio Fishing.